True Life and Music History, the Ants Human Stars podcast, with your hosts, Caleb and Digo. Are you ready? Steady. Go. Music is what you want to learn. Caleb Hacker's got it for you, babe. He's got the music of now, because I know he's coming with something fresh here on Ants, Humans, and Stars. So without further ado, Caleb Hacker.
Thank you. Yes, this artist is contemporary because I like them, but they've been around for several decades. You all are gonna know this individual, and if you don't, I highly advise you get to know them. Okay, so gather around, ladies and gentlemen, and my non-binary peeps. So in the last 4 years of us doing this podcast, I have yet to cover a song by one of my absolute all-time favorite artists. All of my close friends and family know I completely adore this woman. Some might say I'm obsessed. I disagree. I think I am just have a healthy love and reverence for this songstress, who's also known as the vocal Bible. So, and that's what she's also, that's for real what she's known as. I didn't just come up with that title, just so you know. So, all right, I'm talking about the one.
Okay, wait. And by the way, we've got Sebastian here as a guest.
My bad. Let me back up.
We've already said this, Sebastian.
The record player got
different segments.
Record player needs to scratch.
But Sebastian, what's your guess?
Is it Brandy?
What Caleb is about.
Oh, well, wait. First, let me just say, listeners, we have fam back on the podcast, the one and only Mr. Sebastian. Give it up.
Hello.
Give it up. Thank you for joining us again. Great to see you, as always. I know you got a busy schedule out there entertaining the masses.
You know?
But you go ahead and guess. Who do you think it is?
I was thinking Brandy, but...
And who do you think, Digo?
That's what I thought, too.
The way you hyped it up made me think, like...
You are correct.
Yeah.
You are correct. I'm talking about the one, the only Brandy.
Right. Well, then we could flip the script. It could go back to music history because she is of history.
Exactly.
Okay. Cool.
Again, I was like, man, I have never covered a song by her at all, and so, it's time to do it. So we're
you have
about...
mentioned Brandy 112 times in our 36 episodes.
Exactly. I've never covered a song. But today, we're going to talk about her number one smash hit, number one for 13 weeks, the biggest selling song of 1998, won a Grammy, broke records. We're talking about The Boy Is Mine, her duet with another singer that I love, Miss Monica. All right. So I'm mainly going to be reading from a write-up by Tom Brien of Stereo Gum. I edited a few things and added a little bit, but he did a really great job of doing a write-up. He's been doing this for a couple of years because I pulled from other, I pulled from his when I covered Cyndi Lauper. He has gone through every single Billboard Hot 100 number one song and done a write-up for it. And he's been doing this the last couple of years. And so I think he's pretty much close to and I think he does this every week, maybe. I don't know for sure, but he's getting close to like being up to date with where we are now. Because when this article was written, I want to say it was done last year, 2022. In June of 2022 is when he did this. So, all right, let's just dive right in. So Jerry Springer was a daytime TV staple from 1991 to 2018, but it hit some kind of cultural apex in the 90s during a period when daytime talk shows seemed to be in a trashiness arms race. Jerry always won. The show covered some of the grimiest domestic situations that teenage minds could comprehend. Chairs were thrown. Crowds erupted at every new revelation in these randos' absurd stories. The former mayor of Cincinnati hemmed and hawed and mugged for the camera while his guests put their freakiness on full display. I'm guessing this show was taped in Cincinnati. But it was a real spectacle. So in 1998, the Springer producers made a whole lot of money selling Too Hot for TV videos. I didn't know about this, which were extra salacious moments from the show with the cuss words and occasional boobs left in.
Gotta give me some copies of this.
Jerry Springer also starred in a lightly fictionalized version of himself in the feature film Ringmaster. It flopped, but it still appeared in plenty of movie theaters. And in an indirect sort of way, Jerry Springer also helped inspire the teenage superstar duet that held the number one spot for the entire summer of 1998. Brandy and Monica's Monster Smash, The Boy Is Mine, wasn't directly based on Jerry Springer, but the show did play a key role in the song's creation. And Fred Bronson's book, Billboard Book of Number One Hits, the track's co-writer Brandy herself explains, "Women do fight over men. I was watching Jerry Springer one day and these women were fighting over one guy and I thought it was stupid. I thought it would be a great song." Get Brandy credit, Tom says. She understood the zeitgeist of her moment. In the video for The Boy Is Mine, Jerry Springer plays a minor role. So in the video, like, they're Brandy and Monica are both watching like TV and they're watching Jerry Springer, but like Monica will go to change the channel and it'll change Brandy's TV. And like Brandy will change the channel and change Monica's TV. So anyways, that's the little part that Jerry's in. So Jerry Springer was not only he wasn't the only inspiration for The Boy Is Mine. The song where two of the reigning young R&B singers of the moment argued over which of them was in a relationship with some dude. The song's obvious kind of like correlation inspiration came from Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney's duet The Girl Is Mine, which came out when both Brandy and Monica were toddlers. Which The Girl Is Mine was the first single from Thriller. I did not know that. Tom also writes that it was the worst song on the album, and I kind of agree. Like, it is the most boring song on Thriller.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's that. Also in Bronson's book, The Boy Is Mine, co-producer Dallas Austin. Dallas Austin has done songs like Creep and Unpretty for TLC and tons of other stuff. But he told, he said Paris Davis, Brandy's A&R guy, suggested that the two of them, Brandy and Monica, record a Girl Is Mine style song. To hear Austin tell it, Davis wanted it to be Brandy and Monica because, quote, they had been going through this thing where people thought they didn't like each other. Brandy and Monica were never friends, but that didn't mean they were enemies. So the two singers were about the same age. They both come into the music business at the same time. They're extremely young R&B phenoms. They were kids, but they didn't make music. Neither one of them had reached number one before The Boy Is Mine, but both of them had gotten as far as number two on the Billboard Hot 100. In Bronson's book, Monica addressed the whole thing, and she said, "From the time she was released and I was released, instantly people compared us, and I never understood it. They never did it with me and Aaliyah or Brandy and Aaliyah. It was always Brandy and Monica." Aaliyah did debut around the same time as both Brandy and Monica. She was around the same age, but her sound and image and style were so different that Tom says he never even considered the idea that they might be compared. Brandy and Monica, on the other hand, both had a breezy and approachable every girl kind of thing going on. So the comparisons made a little more sense, even if they came off as different kinds of every girl, everyday girl. But Brandy and Monica were very different singers that came from very different circumstances. So Brandy was born in Mississippi. She grew up in somewhat of a showbiz family in Carson City, California. I'm giving y'all all the background, so just strap it. Brandy's father was a gospel singer and a choir leader. He coached both Brandy and her brother, Ray J. everybody knows Ray J. He famously hit it first with Kim Kardashian. And that's a reference to his song that he put out called I Hit It First. Talking about how he was with Kim. But yeah, Brandy grew up performing in the talent shows, and she even sang backup for the kiddie R&B boy band Immature. And if you don't know who Immature is, but if you grew up in the 90s, you remember the show Sister Sister. And if you remember the show, I'm sure you remember Roger. Go home, Roger. Well, that character was played by Marcus Houston, and Marcus Houston was the lead singer in that group, Immature. There you go. Just connected the dots for you. In 1993, when Brandy was 14,
oh my God,
signed with.
Sorry, yeah,
I just
just looked it up.
Saw,
look, I just looked up Roger. I was such a crush with Roger. I had such a crush on with Roger. Oh my God!
Really?
Wait, go ahead.
Cool. So in 1993, Brandy's 14. She signs with Atlantic. That same year, she also landed a role on. As one of the kids on the show Thea, which was an ABC sitcom that only lasted for one season. In 1994, Brandy came out with her self-titled debut album. And at the same time, ABC had canceled Thea. The record is a slick, canny piece of breezy, funky R&B, and it makes good use of Brandy's voice, which manages to be earthy and feathery at the same time. The young Brandy came from the first generation that never knew life before rap music, and she had an innate understanding of how to float over loping program beats. The album was a huge success. She had her debut single, I Wanna Be Down, which reached number 6. I wish you guys could see, like, Sebastian dancing. She had the slinky follow-up, baby, okay, which did even better at number 4. She ultimately launched 3 top 10 singles from that album, and the album went quadruple platinum. It was huge. It was a smash. In 1996, she landed an even bigger hit with Sitting Up in My Room, a song that Babyface wrote and produced for the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack, which took her to number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100. That same year that she released Sitting Up in My Room, which was 1996, she became a proper TV star when she played the title role on Mo to the E to the Moesha, a sitcom on the fledgling UPN network. But it clicked, and Brandy was both charming and believable as a regular kid, handling regular kid problems, and the show became UPN's biggest hit, ultimately lasting for 6 seasons. Also around that time, Moesha debuted, Kobe Bryant, who was preparing to go straight from high school to the NBA draft, famously took Brandy to his senior prom as his date. And that was a big thing at the time. Brandy also co-starred with her hero and mentor, Whitney Houston, in the 1997 TV version of Cinderella, which is the only Cinderella I recognize. I mean, shout out to the classic, but impossible. Great. So the acting, along with various soundtrack singles and all this stuff, kept Brandy super busy. And so it wasn't until 1998 that she finally got around to putting out a sophomore album. Also, I have to mention that she came out with several Barbie dolls around this time, and my sister had a Barbie doll with the Brandy poster on her wall. So just, I grew up with Brandy, okay? She's a part of my life. So she was just killing the game, which also I also have to say, she set precedent for how they marketed and managed teen pop acts. No, I'm not saying Brandy was the first teen pop act. You had Tiffany and Debbie Gibson in the 80s and tons of people. But the way Brandy went from music combined with the TV, combined with the Barbie dolls, and as she had the cover girl deal and all this stuff, like you can see how they then marketed the Britney Spears and the Christina Aguilera's off of that. And then even into how they marketed the Disney girls from Hillary and all this and Raven, with combining, the acting and the music and all that stuff. So Brandy was a little nervous about making her second LP. She didn't like most of the songs that the record company was giving her. She wanted to work with Missy Elliott and Timberland, who were the Virginia producers who were in the process of remaking R&B as psychedelic future funk. But Missy and Tim were already working with Brandy's fellow R&B star, Aaliyah. So instead, she worked with one of their contemporaries, Rodney Darkchild Jerkins. He was an Atlantic City native who grew up in church and who worked as sort of an understudy for Teddy Riley when he was a teenager. He's only a couple years older than Brandy, but he had a slick, jittery style, a more streamlined take on what Timberland was doing. And Brandy really liked it. Jerkins had worked on the Share My World album by Mary J. Blige, which was her sophomore album in 1997. And he actually went on to produce most of Brandy's sophomore album, Never Say Never. So originally, The Boy Is Mine, which was the first single from Never Say Never, was going to be a solo song for Brandy. And you can kind of hear it in the track. Tom says it doesn't exactly offer two different perspectives. It's two different women singing the same thing, more or less, to each other. Brandy was one of five credited writers on The Boy Is Mine. But when she heard the solo version and it was all done, she felt like it was missing something. And she knew that Boy Is Mine needed Monica. Now to Monica. She grew up in Atlanta, neighborhood of College Park, and her family was not a showbiz family. Polo the Don was a producer. Polo the Don, who is a producer, is one of her cousins. But both of her parents just worked at the airport, her father as a mechanic and her mother as a customer service rep. And she grew up singing in churches and she won talent shows around Atlanta as a kid. When she was 10, she became the youngest singer in a touring gospel choir. And when she was 12, Dallas Austin, who, again, like I said, produced hits like Creep by TLC, he heard Monica singing a Whitney Houston song at a talent show and he signed her to to his imprint of Arista Rowdy Records. So, like, Arista's the head record company, and then he had his record company, Rowdy Records, like, under Arista. When Monica was 14, she released her debut album in 1995 called Miss Thang. Like Brandy, she was completely comfortable with singing over rap beats. But unlike Brandy, Monica had serious levels of gospel grits in her voice, even at a young age, which is true. If you listen to her, it's like she does not sound like a 14-year-old girl. In those songs, the sound of Miss Thang is rich and assured, and it's wild that a 14-year-old singer was able to sound that much like what Mary J. Blige was doing at the time. And Monica had a blow up that was almost just as big as Brandy's. Her debut single, Don't Take It Personal, reached number two, and then two more singles from the debut album also became top tens, and the album went triple platinum. Also, like Brandy, Monica followed her debut album with a big soundtrack hit, the song For You I Will from the Space Jam soundtrack in 1997.
That one again.
For You I Will. That's pretty much how, like, okay, the chorus.
That I recognize it. Yeah, I recognize it. Yeah, yeah. From the what movie was it called?
Space Jam.
Based on a true story.
Yeah. It was. We the
monsters
in the wind.
Take notes.
In the wind. Exactly. Oh, man, the good old days. So that song reached number four on the Billboard Hot 100. It showed that Monica could do more than what she had done on her debut. She wasn't a TV star, but she, like Brandy, but she had a bright future. So when Brandy put in the call to have her on the record, it was just perfect timing. They're both gearing up for their second LPs. And yeah, it was a big deal. And they already had a lot going for them. So The Boy Is Mine wasn't written about a real life scenario, but it did riff off of the public perception that Brandy and Monica were rivals. In the Bronson book, Monica says that this was intentional. She says, "We took the song and brought humor to a situation that people had tried to make so serious. We thought it'd be really funny to show us feuding in the video and then come together at the end because we wanted people to let go of the idea of us not liking each other." But of course they hadn't. Decades later, the idea of Brandy and Monica not liking each other still remains a big topic of conversation in both singers' career. Now, they did a Versus in 2020. That was 2020, yeah. And they pretty much, like, they hadn't been together in, like, over a decade. And they have, like, squashed the beef. So they're all good now. Thanks to
Versus. You say a Versus.
Oh, yeah. You don't remember that? That was, like, So during the pandemic,
yeah, I'm like, is there a ring? Is there a ref? Are we
wait,
at
wait, for real? You guys never heard of verses that was going on during the pandemic with like they would take like two big R&B star or rap stars and have them like go song to song. It was more of like a thing in the black community. I was
taking a lot of drugs and depression during that time.
Oh yeah, I was making a lot of muffins and getting bigger, and I was watching verses. It was done by Timbaland and Swizz Beatz, and they would have, you know, two R&B acts or two hip hop acts from the same era or time, and they would essentially battle, and like go back and forth with a song. And like, hey, I got this song. And then the other person responds with another song and blah, blah, blah. Which was really just a celebration of like all their music. And if you liked them, you got to just jam for like 2 hours, 2-3 hours. So Brandy and Monica tried recording The Boy Is Mine together in the same room, but it just didn't work. Voices were clashing. Things just weren't working. So Brandy recorded her part in California with Rodney. And Monica recorded her part in Atlanta with Dallas Austin. And Dallas also tweaked the arrangement just a little bit, which earned him a co-producing credit on the song. The other two credited producers are Rodney Jerkins and Brandy. The song went through multiple mixes until everyone was satisfied. Nobody was upstaged and everything sounded good and balanced. And the Bronson book, Austin says, quote, "I had to make Monica on it. I didn't want it to turn into something where Monica's full character wasn't on it. It had to have their attitudes on it and not just be them singing a song." He said "on it" a lot in those three sentences. it took multiple mixes, but then they finally got the version of The Boy Is Mine that we all know and love today. To his great credit, The Boy Is Mine does showcase the attitudes of both singers. The producers might have had to put the song together, you know, piece by piece, but there's a real chemistry at work on it. The contrast between the two voices is subtle, but it's there. Brandy is softer and Monica is harder. The argument on the track is pretty much it's two kind of thing. And it never reaches a solution, but that probably makes it more fun. It's structured almost like a rap battle, with both Brandy and Monica getting chances to flex on each other. So again, they don't find a resolution, in the song. They're still arguing even as the song fades out. But the video is a little different. The video for The Boy Is Mine is practically part of the text of the song itself. Tom says it's immediately what he thinks of when he thinks of the song. The video, again, shows Brandy and Monica living in beautiful art-directed adjacent apartments, literally right next to each other, having identical conversations with identical groups of friends, and then inadvertently interfering with each other's TV signals. Going back to, like I said, Monica would flip the channel and Brandy's TV would change and vice versa. So eventually, both Brandy and Monica in the video realize that they're dating the same guy, Mekhi Phifer. Tom says...
Jealous.
He says, "Pfeiffer's character must think he's Zach Morris, trying to date two different women, even though they live right next to each other in a damn apartment building." Brandy and Monica figure out what's going on by hearing phone conversations through the wall, and they briefly get up in each other's faces, but the video ends with Phifer knocking on Brandy's door and discovering that Monica is right there with her. And last shot in the clip is Phifer looking confused as they slam the door on his face. And
poor Roger.
No. Mekhi Phifer is not Marcus Houston, not Roger. He's a different. It's another black guy.
That was me with names.
I know.
I heard an M name, M, and I was
I know.
So it's Marcus Houston.
Marcus Houston,
and then you're talking about
Mekhi Phifer, who Mekhi Phifer played in Soul Food, and he also played in Frick, what was the other one? He also played in I Still Know What You Did.
Oh yeah,
last summer.
No,
as Brandy's love
interest, he's been in so many things.
Yeah. Sorry. I lost my place. So in 2020, Mekhi spoke with Entertainment Weekly about his memories about shooting the video, and he said, "quote I just moved to California from New York. I was meeting with the people involved with I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, and Brandy had already been cast in the film as my love interest. We were getting ready to shoot the movie in a few weeks, and in between all of that, she was working on the music video for The Boy Is Mine. They asked me if I wanted to be the boy in The Boy Is Mine. I thought it would be a cool little prequel to the films, so I said for sure, and the rest is history. So The Boy Is Mine caught fire in ways that nobody could have anticipated. Tom said that he graduated from high school a couple of weeks before The Boy Is Mine hit number one, and it was still sitting at the top of the charts while he settled into his dorm at Syracuse, like later that fall. Again, The Boy Is Mine became the best-selling song of the year in 1998, selling over 2.6 million copies. I actually have The Boy Is Mine on vinyl that I found at the record store one day, and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. Even when I went to go check out, the guy who rung me up, he was like, dang, I didn't even know we had this. This is like really cool. It became the second song in the history of the charts to ascend directly to number one from a previous position beneath the top 20. It's the second song in the history of the charts to ascend to number one after first coming in below the top 20. So the song came in at 23 and then like the next week shot to number one. And the first group to do that was the Beatles for their song Can't Buy Me Love, which came in at 27 and then shot directly to number one. And that was in April of 1964. The Boy Is Mine was awarded the Grammy Award for Best R&B Vocal Performance by Duo or Group, and it also received nominations for both Record of the Year and R&B Song, Best R&B Song, in 1999. But let's talk about the 1998 MTV Video Music Awards, where it was nominated for Video of the Year and Best R&B Video. So in September of 98, when the VMAs premiered, Brandy and Monica sang The Boy Is Mine together on stage for the first time at the VMAs. That's also the only time that they've ever sang that song together on television. Brandy famously sang it on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno by herself. And apparently, Monica wasn't happy about that. So at the time when they were at the VMAs, the song had only fallen from number one a few days earlier. And at the time, there were persistent rumors that they weren't getting along. And that they had a fight during the VMA rehearsals. And the two put out a joint statement denying those rumors. But years later, they admitted that, yes, Monica had, in fact, punched Brandy in the face backstage. during the show itself, Brandy and Monica spent most of the performance at opposite ends of the stage. And that's on YouTube. So you can go check it out and see it. And they both sounded good, and it was a cool performance. You would never know that because they actually kind of smiled at the end, like together. So you wouldn't know that they had just had a physical altercation in the back before.
Professionals.
Tom says a song inspired by Jerry Springer had led to some Jerry Springer shit. So yeah, there's that. So Brandy and Monica might not have liked each other, but The Boy's Mind served to make them even bigger stars. The big superstar duet of 1998 was supposed to be When You Believe, the ballad from the biblical cartoon epic The Prince of Egypt, which is one of the coolest cartoon films of all time. Whether you believe in God or not, like the movie is just well done. Great music and everything. And in that film, that song When You Believe was by Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey. And, you know, they were finally singing together. And okay. So part of that song's appeal of When You Believe, part of that appeal was, again, yeah, Whitney and Mariah coming together, because it was also said that, oh, they don't get along and whatnot. At that same VMAs that Brandy and Monica performed at that year, 1998, Whitney and Mariah came out and they presented an award together. They were wearing the same outfits and they were pretending to be pissed off at each other. Again, you can find that clip on YouTube as well. But the hype didn't work. When You Believe peaked at number 15 on the Billboard Hot 100. While the two women from a younger generation singers who were both post Whitney and Mariah reigned for an entire summer with a smarter, sharper song that actually played on their perceived animosity. So yeah, they released The Boy's Mind. It was a huge song. They went off to have huge albums. I know both of them definitely did over double platinum. Brandy had another number one. Monica had two more number ones from that album with Angel of Mine. And then her song The First Night, which I did a cover of Angel of Mine back in, I think it's 2010 or 2009. And that is the most watched cover of mine on YouTube with over like 100,000 views. I don't even think I sound that great, but people to this day still comment and seem to really like it. Shout out to Monica and that song, which maybe I'll cover some other time because I haven't done a Monica song either. So that's pretty much it on the song. Just as a little asterisk, while The Boy Is Mine sat at number one on the Hot 100, the Goo Goo Dolls quasi-grunge soundtrack ballad Iris kicked off an astonishing 18-week run at number one on Billboard's radio song charts. Iris was never released as a single, and Billboard's rules at the time, you know, it said that if a song wasn't released as a single, it could not chart on the Billboard Hot 100. It was 18 weeks on the radio song charts, but it couldn't chart on the number one. And then by the end of 1998, Billboard changed that rule. And so they were able to make it on the charts. And it was still big enough that it reached number nine on the Hot 100. Tom just notes that if that change had happened earlier, that song probably would have made it to number one at some point in that summer of 98. So, just an interesting little tidbit. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That is the story, the myth, the legend behind number one smash, The Boy Is Mine. Also, that is the most successful female duet of all time in music history. So, yeah, bigger than any other female duet that's been done. Yeah.
How do you feel having finally gotten to Brandy?
The new Nicki and Ice Spice song.
They can try. They can try all they want. But I actually just checked the charts today, and that's not even number. I don't, or maybe it was. Was it number one? But it's not number one yet. I think it was sitting at like number four. So they're gonna have to try a little harder if they want a 13-week all summer long smash hit. But yes, I feel good.
TikTok just needs to get a hold of it.
anything I guess is possible, but we'll see. But yes, Diego, I feel good. I'm glad that I got that info out there for all of my listeners. Thank you guys for being great audience of two.
And if Brandy likes the Twitter post,
yes, I will
of this scream. Episode. Yes.
So I just a little info for the listeners. So back in, it was funny because it just the Facebook has like the rewind thing where it shows you like
the memories from, thing.
Yeah, the memories. Yeah. And yeah, early April of 2017, I went to see Brandy in the Broadway play of Chicago at the Kennedy Center. And she was amazing. I took my mom and my sisters. I dragged
your parents.
Hey, yo.
I dragged them. Well, because I was like, is that the right tense of that to say I drugged them or I dragged?
Roy, anyways, slip. We know what you did.
Dragged them.
I took them with me. That's the point. And the show was great, and they were even blown away. And they're like, wow, she did such a good job. And then I met her afterwards. She came out, and then I sang to her, and I have that on video. And
gave her a few.
I did, and she gave me a few back. It was cool. I was like, I guess technically I can kind of technically say I've sung with Brandy. I have it on video. But yeah, and she was awesome and so sweet and so kind and so generous. I always say I would like to meet her at least just one more. I am going to meet her one more time because I'm going to actually sing with her. But I'll never forget. I was there, and the first thing I said was, I was like, hi. My sister first actually was in front of her and was talking to her, and she was like, hey, my brother really loves you. And she turned around, she was like, hey, how's it going? And I was just like, good. And and then I was just like, can I sing for you? I don't know why that's what I wanted to do, but I made up my mind. I was like, if I meet her, I'm gonna sing for her. And in no way was I like, oh, she's gonna sign me or something. Like, no, I wanted to sing for her for whatever wild reason. And I sang, and she sang along, and she's like digging it. You can see the video. And then after I was done, I was just like, thank you. And that was it. And she was just looking at me, like smiling, like, you want to say anything else? And I was just like, I don't know what to say. And then I just walked off, and I started jumping up and down when I walked outside. And so I would like to meet her again just to say, to tell her how much she means to me, because I had no words. I had absolutely no words. But she was so kind, so gracious, not only to me, but how she just handled everybody. That was also the first time I've ever seen, like, people are crazy. They, like, bum rushed her. She came out the door. It's a crowd of people, and they're like a sea. And I'm not trying to exaggerate. They just, like, all moved in on her. And Brandy is little. She's, like, my height. She's not, I'm 5'7". She's not some huge woman. She's small, and she, at the time, she was like super skinny, and I mean, she's never been big, so yeah, she's small, but yeah, I was like, what are you guys doing? Like, just give her a moment. She's coming.
Give her anyways. She just got out.
Exactly. No, literally, I'm not kidding. She walked through the door, and like the crowd of people just like moved in, and I was like, what is, like, what are, like. Yeah, anyways, but she was so kind and sweet, and yeah, so it was very awesome. And I hope you guys enjoyed that at least half as much as I did.
Impossible, Caleb. Impossible.
Impossible for a plain yellow pumpkin to become a golden carriage. Okay, I'm done. That was from Cinderella, hey. 1997. Yeah, yeah.
And scene.
the tried and true Cinderella.
Tried and true. I mean, look, you had so many amazing people in that film, from, yes, of course, Brandy, Whitney Houston, but Victor Garber, Bernadette Peters, Whoopi Goldberg, what's the dude from Seinfeld?
Yeah. Victor Garber. Remember. I'm like, who the hell is that? Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. You mean George?
I don't, what is his name?
The bald guy?
Yeah. The bald guy.
Yeah. Yeah. George. His name is George in the show. I forget his name. George Alexander.
Yes. Yes. He's in the film. He was incredible. Yeah. It was just all star cast. Paolo Montalban as the prince, our Asian prince. All that diversity. A black woman and a white man had an Asian baby. Like, it was just
that white people were just up in arms.
Exactly.
Not my Cinderella.
Right. but it was a huge smash. That was the biggest watch television movie at the time. That came out, the Wonderful World of Disney, when they were doing that series every Sunday. I remember watching it at the debut. I remember my mom buying us the VHS, which I still have. Yeah. Good memories.
Does it have rolling lines on it? You watched it so much.
It might. You know, I have
VHSs
not...
get that.
I know. Yeah, yeah. It might. I haven't watched it in years. It's now on Disney Plus, so you don't need the physical.
You don't copy. Have to hear the coming soon to own on VHS.
Exactly.
In the very beginning.
Wait, but also Disney had that. Da, 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 da,
yeah. Yep.
Where it would spell out Walt Disney. Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff.
Aww.
Yep.
Those great are times. Memories. Those are times.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to bring the energy. I was listening to our last episode and I was like, I wasn't bringing enough energy.
So how dare you?
Tried to up it.
Sebastian, you got some connect with some cocaine up in there you can give Caleb next time. Just give it a little bump.
That's all. Mexican?
No. I just assumed you have it because Caleb doesn't. And you're the only other person in this call is in the United States. So you get them. Get them a bump. Or a cup of coffee. I don't know. Either way.
Just Narcos on the Zoom call.
Yeah, coffee will do. That's all I need.
Coffee.
Or talk about brandy each and every time.
Yeah, just a little brandy segment every episode.
Every time. See, people out here think I'm obsessed. Okay, I just enjoy her. All right.
She has a special place in your heart. There's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. She has a special place in my heart. That's all. I'm not trying to be like out front of her house or something. I'm just. I support, man. I support.
But if you knew where she lived, you'd be Loretta.
Outside with my boombox, the karaoke version of all her songs. No. I enjoy.
Remember myself. Me? Exactly.
I sang with you. I sang to you.
I'd be like, boy, who?
After the crowd rushed, remember that? You were like about to be trampled. And then then I came and we sang together. And then I kind of froze up and I couldn't say anything else. And you were just smiling at me, hoping I would say anything else. And then you just walked away and I saw you walk away. And then I thought, one day I'll see you again, Brandy. And one day I'll see you again.
And I will say, I not to go on, but last thing, I just will say I genuinely appreciate her so much because she, and I watched it, not just with me, but she gave everybody their time. She wasn't rushing anybody. And like I said, she was looking at me like, hey, do you want to talk about anything else you want to say? And there's a crowd of people, there's tons more people that she has to see, but she was very much like, it wasn't like okay, all right, rushing me off. She was like, you
thanks for the runs, let's go.
exactly. She didn't do that, and so I was like, I had my moment. I could have said whatever I wanted to, but she was very, very kind, very kind.
Thanks for listening to the Ants Human Stars podcast with Caleb and Digo. Stay connected and get updates about new episodes by visiting our website, antshumanstars.com, and by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a positive rating and review and share about us with your community on social media. Thanks, y'all. We really appreciate it.